right, ladies and gentlemen, let's dig in. So, we're still in section two, and there's still a lot of ground to cover. So we can either just go for it and move rather quickly today, and maybe not do a ton of talking at our tables. There's going to be talking at the tables anyway, you know, especially this table. or we can just kind of see how it goes, and it might take a third session to get through session two. But anyway, the good news today is we're going to be in God's Word and continue to be motivated by Jesus' love to think about what that means for how we handle our finances and the good gifts that God gives to us. But it's going to continue to be very practical as well. So if you're maximizing the practical value of the class, we've been working on the spending plan. We talked about some things like income, and we finished up with taxes last time. So if you're inserting those numbers and trying to use this to plan your financial situation, by all means, keep doing that. Today, we're going to focus on getting into giving generously. So a couple thoughts there. True giving comes from a heart that responds eagerly to God's grace, mirrors his image and actions, and trusts boldly in the promise of God. I especially want to focus on the second one, mirrors God's image and actions. You think about how God gives generously, and then John 3:16 comes to mind, right? God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. So when we talk about our giving being patterned after God's giving, kind of like Pastor mentioned in the sermon this morning, nothing even comes close to that. No suffering on earth even comes close to the awesomeness that we're going to experience in heaven because of Jesus. It's the same thing with our giving. Small sacrifices on earth, huge blessings in heaven. Yep.
Well, I don't know if we get into this, but another aspect of how he gives, and occasionally you hear this from somebody around here, well, I don't want to give my money because you guys will just screw it up. I'm not comfortable with how. Can you imagine what he gives and how we screw it up? Then he gives more and we screw it up. Then he gives triple and we triple screw it up. And it's just, you know, I think that's another, his image and his actions, how he gives. He just keeps giving even though we don't do a good job of it.
So even though your church is going to mismanage your money, keep giving it. No, that actually leads us right into our first question. I'm sorry for not starting by referencing where we are in the workbook. We are on page 40 in the workbook. Here's your workbook. Okay, so at our tables, let's discuss the first question top of the page. Identify things that get in the way of being a generous giver, including you don't trust your church to use your money wisely. What else might get? I'm just kidding about that, I hope you know. But it actually was one of the reasons the leader's guide gave for not being a generous giver. Talk about this at your table first. Givers.
I think looking at giving kind of like you look at your other bills. So like if you look at giving like it's an expense, like your other bills, then that's going to get in the way because you're going to pay your other bills or buy your refrigerator or whatever it is that you have to do before you give, if you look at giving as an expense.
Yeah, that's excellent. And that can be a negative like you suggested. It can actually be a positive if in your management of your finances, giving is no different than paying the electric bill in the sense that you're going to pay the electric bill. And so let not giving be something that happens after all that happens. The first check I write or the first thing I do is give. And then everything else has to fall into place after that. So that fits into both ways of looking at it. Any other thoughts on things that prevent us from giving generously? Right? Yep. Gotta have mine. Or I earn this, now I get to enjoy it. Absolutely.
There won't be enough.
Right. After all the other expenses of life, there's not enough to give. Good.
Well, when the news says the economy's dropped and your 401k is gone. fear of those things.
Sure. Any type of, although things have been rolling as of late.
No, but that's how it is sometimes.
Absolutely. Go ahead. Right, and I don't have a regular source of income, so therefore I can't be putting something in the offering plate. I have definitely gone through that phase in my life too. Thank you for sharing. We already touched on these three bullet points. Let's see, next in our workbooks, we've got the gray shaded box. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, let's read together what the Apostle Paul says. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows generously will also reap generously. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. So what's the promise God makes there to those who give generously?
Harvest.
There's going to be a harvest. And that doesn't mean you're going to be rolling in it, but He promises to take care of you. And that's what we focused on last time. Go ahead.
That shouldn't be the reason that you give, because you want to get back. Because that's been misquoted to me a lot of times.
Sure. No, it's not a conditional statement.
Right.
It's just the reality of it. Motivated by Jesus' love, we give, and God will take care of us. All right, let's keep going. Guidelines for giving. So these three P's, the author of the Bible study kind of suggests that, you know, these are easy to remember words, and if we can take these three P's with us, that would be a good thing. The first one being priority, and we've got subsequent Bible verses that help drive these points home. So we've got Proverbs chapter 3, King Solomon, let's read together.
Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine.
So take a quick look at that Bible verse. Where do we see priority in that Bible verse? Highlight the one word that demonstrates priority. So the motivation is honoring the Lord. And how do we do that? First fruits. And you know, I think we have a hard time understanding that idea of first fruits, because back in when we were a very agriculturally oriented society, harvesting your crop and literally giving the first fruits to the Lord, we can apply that probably more in a financial sense, that when we earn our income, the first and the best of it given to the Lord. The second P is personal or free will giving, a decision compelled by God's love. That brings to mind, I'm not going to remember the reference, but one of my favorite Bible verses, for Christ's love compels us. We're convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died. He died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for Him who died for them. And how we give is one of the ways that we can live for Him. So let's read what the Apostle Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 9.
Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver.
Quick, take a look at that verse. Where do we get personal from that verse? Giving is a personal thing. Louder?
He has decided.
Right. It's something that we're working out in our hearts, thinking about in our minds, and it's between us and God. Excellent. The last P is proportional, or percentage giving. Giving that everyone can do, no matter the age, broke college students, or income. Let's read what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians.
Do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income.
So pretty straightforward question, kind of a slam dunk answer, but what words in that verse demonstrate the idea of being proportional, a percentage of your income? Go ahead. And yeah, straightforwardly it says, in keeping with your income. Absolutely. So then that brings the question, and maybe it's already on your mind, the idea of 10%, the tithe. So let's go to the top of page 41 in our workbooks. Couple bullet points. The idea of the 10%, the tithe, from the Old Testament. It matches the biblical example of giving from early on, Abraham, Jacob, and it demonstrates, the author demonstrated that those guys came before the law being given to the Israelites, which pretty much demanded the tithe. These guys were doing it joyfully and cheerfully before God really laid it out there in his law. Helps as a benchmark for people of grace who see beyond the Old Testament law requirements. So the idea of a tithe, while not maybe commanded for the New Testament church, well, it's an example God gave from the Bible of what he expected from his Old Testament people, so maybe it's a guide that we can use for ourselves. Brings a new level of personal joy and blessing. And I think the idea there is stretching ourselves to that extent and finding out that maybe we can do it. And maybe it is possible to give that much of our income to the Lord. Let's read from Malachi chapter 3 in the shaded box.
Return to me, and I will return to you, says the Lord Almighty. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room enough for it.
So like Pam said, we're not giving so that we get in return, but God says, I dare you. I dare you to be that generous with your offering and see what I do for you. So that's kind of a neat way of looking at it.
So a couple things. One is I heard the expression, tithing is just training wheels for true giving. It gets you used to the idea, it gets you kind of rolling. And then from there, it really should be what's needed, what do I have, give it. I'm not there. It'd be really hard to be there just, oh, you need that? Take it. You know, I have it. Take it, right? I mean, that's maturity I don't have yet. And then second, I was thinking is, and I don't know if it goes there, but even, you know, broke college students, they don't have a lot of money, but I mean, they're here, how many hours are they gonna spend? I'm not paying you guys. But, or when you clean the church, it probably cost us $300 a week to pay somebody to clean that church. So in some ways it's, or mowing that stupid lawn, when both mowers are broken, you know, and, you know, that kind of thing, right? So I think there's a different, I know I've always heard it said, sometimes you have more time than money, other times you have more money than time, and as you go through your life, so I think there's different ways to look at, you know, time, talent, treasure kind of things.
It'd be interesting to apply the tithe to our time. What percentage of our time is given to the Lord?
Oh, another bad one, yeah.
Absolutely. No, I like how you brought that up. Early on, the tithe might be a tremendous stretch, but then you might get to the point where, you know, don't see it as a limiting factor. Oh, I got to 10%, I'm done. How much farther beyond that can we go?
And I think in the Old Testament, the tithe, it was taxes, basically, right? I think that's kind of how it was. It was like taxes. And so I don't think we want to see our giving as taxes. God taxes, right? So,
yeah. My joyful response. Absolutely. Okay, let's keep going in the workbook. In the dotted box, the author makes the note, beware of the heart's tendency to turn a response to God's promises into a form of legalism or a lid. So Mike just touched on that in different words. Same idea. And then we've got our diagram again, turning away from the old self, turning to the new self. The old self, when it comes to giving, says, if I give, I'll get. Wrong motivation. The new self says, I have God's rich grace. That's why I give. And then the key thought, how would my life change if I live on 90% of what God entrusts to me? So again, not right now, but if you're working through the worksheets and whatnot, the spending plan, now we get to think about giving. So thinking about what we're currently giving as a percentage of our income, and then maybe through this exercise, thinking about a new percentage of our income that we might strive to give and see if we can't make the rest of it fall into place. Goal for the new self, bottom of page 41, to be generous. Regularly asking for faith to increase our giving to reach a generosity that looks even beyond the tithe. So again, if you're spending time with the worksheets, now you have a little bit of thought process that you can put into your giving. And then the next practical aspect of this is saving. So, purposes of saving, they give us four. Save to demonstrate discipline, prepare for emergencies, design healthy finances, respond better to needs. Any discussion on any of those points really quickly? We're going to see saving set up as kind of a progression from just, you know, well, I'll just throw it out there right now. The river analogy. You're in a river. The river's flowing downstream, and you by yourself are not going to make it because let's just say there's a little bit of rapids and it's a rough ride. The first step is just getting to the point where we're making ends meet, the life vest. So we're floating in the river. The river's still taking us the wrong direction, but at least we're getting air and at least we're staying alive. The next step would be getting to the point where we have enough saved that we can deal with unexpected emergencies, maybe pay for some larger expenses with cash. The idea that we're now in the river, maybe in a raft, and we have an oar. So we have a little bit of ability to manipulate that river's current. We're still fighting hard, maybe against a strong current. Maybe all we can do is stay put. Maybe we're not even going upstream yet, but at least we're stable. And then the third aspect of it is, now my raft has a motor. And not only am I able to stay afloat and manage the river's current, I'm able to go up the current because now I've got maybe retirement savings in place and I'm a little bit more well prepared for the future. Go ahead.
Okay, so saving is a goal, okay? And it does, it takes a lot of discipline. But we have to realize that sometimes there's emergencies and it's not that we were not well disciplined or we didn't do a good job. It was an emergency and we have to, again, go out and trust God and look for His help in this.
Absolutely.
Okay, just check.
Well, and this is all going to present things from a very idealistic, you know, perspective. So, yeah, keep that in mind, absolutely.
Well, I was just thinking that as you go along in life and maybe you get a promotion, a little more money, or you get a bonus, a little more money. I mean, I, again, point the finger first at myself. I sure don't think, oh, wow, if I get that little bit of bonus, now I can contribute to this savings account, or I can do, it's more like, wow, that'd be kind of fun to know that car that I'm spending 6 hours a week working on, get that thing out of here, and you know, or maybe add a couple days on the vacation somewhere. Not, you know, just we're thinking about those kind of things. Maybe we need to have like two lists and choose one from each, or you know, just a little more balanced approach.
Like, sure.
You know, we'll get rid of the car and we'll do stained glasses, but yeah, it's done. But you know, whatever. There's always something.
That point was actually made last time we were talking about income and then the raise or the bonus. And if you don't have a plan for that, you know, then all of a sudden it either one disappears if it was a one-time thing, or all of a sudden my raise, you know, my expenses increase, and then all of a sudden that raise I needed just to, as opposed to the idea that I was living fine before the raise, what can I do with the raise and not let my expenses consume it? Okay, so talking about savings. Let's see, we're in the middle of page 42. Scripture reveals insight into the value of saving. Identify key saving principles from the following passage. So we'll read the passage together, and then let's just quickly identify the saving principle. King Solomon, Proverbs 21.
In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. So what do we see about saving there
from King Solomon?
Be a prepper.
What's that?
Be a prepper.
Right. So he's not consuming it all like the foolish person. He's keeping some of it. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 6. Go to the ant, you sluggard.
Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest.
Again, King Solomon, the principle from Proverbs.
The ant.
Be an ant.
I was always telling my son, you've got to get up and you've got to work if you want to eat. Just look at the Bible, it says the ant works.
And it stops moving, right? And it can carry 10 times its weight and all that cool stuff. Absolutely. Again, storing its provisions so that it has them in a time where there's going to be less. And then let's go to the last one, Proverbs 13.
Dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow.
That's a pretty practical lesson on saving. What do you learn from that?
Well, there was that stat. Was it like 10 bucks a week turns into $1 million at retirement? It was earlier in the workshop. I think one of the weeks you were out that week. I think it said if you're young, 10 bucks a week is $1 million when you get ready to retire. So the little by little.
Yeah, and that's going to be a point made later in this lesson.
Two Starbucks.
Right, right. We're going to see some numbers play out, and it's the idea that, okay, I want to save $6,000 a year. Do I do that by just at one time setting aside $6,000, or do I $500 a month incrementally in smaller proportions that I can handle putting away? Little by little. And then the idea of making it grow, too. And we're going to talk a little more specifically about what we can do to help our finances grow. Last question on the bottom of the page. Who in Scripture demonstrated the wisdom and blessings of saving? So challenge to you. Can you think of any scriptural examples? Josiah, King Solomon talking here. Expand.
7 good years, 7 bad years.
He said king, or not king, but Joseph, right? That's probably the most obvious example. Good. And that was God's wisdom that enabled him to have the foresight to do that. Okay, let's get into some specifics regarding savings, talking about 3 basic categories. The first one is emergency savings. So, on page 43, you've got similar information to what's up here, and there might be some fill-in-the-blank opportunities. So the first point is start immediately by saving blank for emergencies only. Are these the same?
Oh,
$1,000. Yep. So you got this in front of you, and I think the same information translates up here. So the idea of if I haven't saved anything, maybe the first goal would be to have $1,000 set aside for emergencies. That $1,000 may or may not get the job done, but it's a place to start. The next level would be work up to 2 to 5 months of basic expenses. I don't even think that's, you know, if you look at your budget, that's take out all the fluff that does not have to be there. If your income shut down today, what would the bare minimum needs be? And try to save enough to cover that for 2 to 5 months, possibly while you rebound and secure a new job if necessary. And then lastly, saved in easy to get at funds. So we wouldn't want to tie up emergency savings in, you know, retirement funds, maybe mutual funds that are going to be harder to get it out of. It needs to be quick and easy. A bank account, although then you're probably not necessarily gaining much interest on it, but you need the practical aspect of it's there when I need it. Any thoughts on emergency savings?
Well, just one is that it doesn't mean increase your credit limit on your credit card. That's not emergency. I had somebody tell me this, a family member. Oh, I have emergency. My credit card can go up to $30,000 if I need it. You know, one of those. On the other side, maybe like a home equity line, maybe that is like a third line of defense or something. So you can do some of that stuff. But yeah, I thought that was interesting when somebody told me that. And they weren't kidding.
Okay. So. We're talking about actual dollars saved. Priority number 2, major purchase savings. So the goal here, replace or purchase without borrowing larger ticket items. So the workbook talks about things like cars, remodeling, furniture, vacations, plan to be purchased within 5 years. So looking ahead a little bit, all right, I know my car's got 150,000 miles on it, and I'm going to drive it to 200, and that's 5 years played out, 10,000 miles a year. I'm going to need to buy a new vehicle 5 years from now. Can I save enough to pay for that vehicle with cash and not take out a loan? So getting to that point where we can put enough away to possibly purchase a car without a loan. An example. Where might we put priority 2 major purchase savings so that we can get a little bit more mileage out of that money being set aside? Talks about a CD, although CDs these days aren't the greatest because interest rates are so low. I can remember as a teenager having a CD upwards of 4 or 5%. Now you're probably in the ones, right?
So you're not necessarily gaining a lot from a CD right now. Fixed income / balanced mutual funds. So mutual funds that are designed recurringly, God willing, they're going up in value, but they kick out some money as well. And then that can be reinvested or that can be taken as income. High interest savings accounts. Is there such a thing? Even like a money market account, but the interest rates are just low. So it might be a little bit of a challenge to save for, you know, the 5-year big expenses and get too much interest out of them just because those options aren't that great right now.
Still, burying it in a can in the backyard
right.
is not the answer.
Right.
I get it. That's what it's called.
I have a money market checking account, and I enjoy seeing the few cents that I get on it each month. Any thoughts on major purchase savings? Maybe there's some experience in the room of folks who have gotten to this point and can talk about how they got there.
I remember one of Morgan's teachers, they always put money in the bank like it was the car payment, even though the car was always paid off. So when that car moved out, they had the money to get another one. And that's
sure.
just how they lived as far as the car goes. And I thought,
That's a great example. And if you didn't hear, it's making the car payment to yourself. If you're not paying off a loan, pay it to yourself, and then it'll be ready when you're ready to purchase the car. Excellent. And then the third priority, long-term savings. This is now the raft has a motor, and we're able to swim. We're able to go upstream. So what's the goal here? Supporting personal financial goals that are at least 5 years away, especially retirement and education. Education probably being children's education, if we're going to try to support them in that. Taking advantage of employers' retirement plan options if possible. And where would we do this kind of saving? We might be talking about the stock market, equity-based mutual funds, qualified accounts, bonds, or real estate. We're going to get into a lot more specifics regarding some specific ways that we can save for retirement. IRAs, 401ks, and stuff like that. So we'll leave that aside right now and get onto that a little bit later. Long-term investments. So Sarah and I are in our 30s, and at this point our strategy is very growth-oriented. We're just putting it away, and we're not gonna touch it for 30 years, and just, you know, hopefully if the stock market's working well, let it grow. And not be paying attention to the ups and downs of the stock market every day, because it's long-term growth-oriented. Just let it ride the waves. Okay. Let's turn the page to 44. Go ahead, Mike.
I think it starts with just putting away what you can is one thing, but I don't know if it's irresponsible not to meet with somebody that's kind of professional at these things and can tell you. Like I said, when we did it, I had no idea the factor of you have to plan to live to be 100. And it's a major bummer about how much money you need to live that long. And so, you know, just some of those things were eye-opening to me. So I think probably there's a step in there of maybe just setting, there's some online stuff. You can go to whatever, the Fidelity or those guys, and there's online stuff. And in 15 minutes, you can probably get an idea of what your number should be.
I didn't mean to say that, you know, flippantly at all. Absolutely getting some planning involved.
Yeah.
And Mike and I are not the planners. So we would just give you the advice to consult the planner. So many different options, right? Edward Jones might be an example. You're going to pay for that service, but the wisdom that is shared with you might be worth paying for. Go ahead.
And one of the things that the planners do now, when you sit down with them, they say, okay, how much risk are you looking to take every dollar that you earn? And how conservative do you want to be? So it's all laid out in the program. And you just sit down and you talk it out. And it ends up that
yeah, it still doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, and along those lines, I mean, some of it's insurance. I had somebody tell me, I mean, it should almost be criminal if you're like a younger family and you have some kids and you have one income or two income, you don't have any life insurance. That's flat out wrong. That's like a moral issue, they were saying. This wasn't an insurance salesman either, but it was interesting to think of it that way. That if you went poof, and whatever you make every year goes poof, and you haven't taking care of your husband and kids or your wife and kids or whatever, it's flat out morally wrong. So.
Yeah.
Well, I would be back with that.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
When I worked for Thrive for 3 years, that was a big eye-opener of people that had insurance and were well off, and other people that had like maybe 25,000, teenage daughter, and didn't own a home or a car. And the husband was a sole breadwinner of the family. That's tough.
Yeah. You know, along the way, we've been saying a lot of the folks in the room are pretty seasoned and just talking about our Excel spreadsheets and whatnot. Probably fairly on the right track with this kind of stuff. But Sarah and Cassie, super cool that you're here, because some of the things we're going to get into now as we talk about getting into saving and we're going to start seeing some real numbers, you can see how getting after it early in the game can pay off hugely down the road. So the idea of compound interest, you probably have covered this in a math class along the way. It's exponential growth. So we're just going to plow forward here a couple. So the example of earning 10% on $1,000. After a year, that's $100. It goes back in, and now we're earning that 10%. This is compounded annually. Some compounding takes place much more frequently than annually. But now that 10% is on $1,100. And then it's on $1,210. And then it's on $1,331. And then it's on $1,464. And in 5 years, we ended up gaining that whole $110.50 because it just keeps building. A couple other practical examples. I think we have this one in our workbooks, page 44. So investing $300 per month, averaging 8% for 40 years. So if you did that pretty much for your working career, only $300 per month. That is $1,444,000 out of your pocket, and it becomes $1,000,000, $47,302. So that's the example of if you get after it early and you stay after it regularly, the growth that can take place is phenomenal. Another example, monthly savings needed to reach $1,000,000 by age 65. So starting at 25 years old through 60. And the one I'm a little confused on this one, how much are we putting away?
If you wait till you're 60 to start, you have to put
There you go. So as a 25 year old, you don't even need to put $200 away per month.
50 bucks a week, you're there.
Yeah. Again, totally making the case for get after it early, even if it's small.
And forget that you have it. Don't go in there and borrow from yourself.
No, oh no, no. Let it ride. So this kind of alludes to what Rosemary said earlier about giving, you know, positively in the sense that if I'm locked in as this is something I do, no different than paying the bills. Negatively, if it's something I do after I pay the bills. But the same idea with saving. Treating savings as an expense. And it might go so far as taking it out of your paycheck before you even see it, beginning with an automatic withdrawal. I think Ramsey says an ideal goal would be to be saving 10% of your income for retirement. Go ahead.
You know how many people in our church have automatic withdrawals in
the church? I don't know what the number is.
Several churches, pastors I know, they have actually have ATMs.
Right.
So they actually have ATMs where you can put it in there and put it in the church's account. Or other people have automatics, so every week so much money comes out of your check account closer to
the end. Right. So my Bank of America automatic bill pay I can set up to give my offering. Absolutely. Maybe our new Pastor Colin will have some ideas about that. We've been exploring with our school. Still probably reluctant to go the credit card route because you got to deal with 2-3% of who's going to pay that. The ACH is basically someone giving us permission to hit their checking account, which might be a different way of an electronic payment as well. Because you're right, people don't write checks. And what we're actually seeing now is people are more apt to pay large sums of money with cash, which isn't necessarily a good idea, but they're that far removed from writing a check that they would prefer to pay with cash. Yep?
I think all of this is good, you know. Planning, all this planning, but if something can happen in your life that, like, takes all your planning and puts it. And so I think it all really does come back to, like, you do have to have the right heart in the first place, because you can do all this, and then if you lose it all, then what? I mean, then are you just going to fold? And, you know, so I think you still have to have a heart that trusts, because, you know, if you put all your trust into your plan or into your savings.
And then you remember that sometimes God's plans are different than ours. And earlier in this class, we used the sparrow passage, and then we got it in the gospel lesson today. The same God who doesn't let a sparrow die without knowing about it is the same God who's looking over us. Absolutely. So it's that balance of trust versus as much as I am able to be a good steward of God's blessings. Absolutely. So bottom of page 44 in the workbook, save now. Make it a priority, treating savings like an expense. Begin with an automatic withdrawal investment plan, mutual fund, IRA, CD examples, and we're going to get into those a little bit more. Strive to save at least 10% of your earnings, depending, and this is a good point, seasons of life, your financial situation, and your age. So as much as that might be a good recommendation and ideal, it might not be your reality. I think the point then is analyze your situation and do what you can. Really quickly, bottom of page 44, any ideas on how to save now in a systematic way?
Never see the money. That the automatic withdrawal is the best. Put it into an account, never see it, never touch it.
Can't spend it.
Nope.
It's as though you don't have it. Good.
Well, and there's usually things that you can, I use the Starbucks example or the eating out example. There's usually things in that budget you go, all right, that one's out, that's in. So there may need to be a clear trade of, no, I'm not, I'm going to pack my lunch at work, or, you know, something like that.
No more Starbucks.
Yeah, or, well, let's cut it in half to begin. And then we'll
get a nerve.
Yeah, right. No, I've never bought a coffee at Starbucks.
You have to.
Not for me. I've been in there, you bought it. But I think you can always find something to trim a little and make it happen.
And sometimes it's the habit, right? It's a habit to spend it, and it takes a lot of work to become a habit to not spend it. Go ahead.
I think, like Ellie said a couple of weeks ago, that her dad would her do, I think if we all wrote down every day for a month what we blew money on, whether it was a Starbucks, a candy bar, a this, a that, going to the movies, and all that, to see it, I guess that's kind of the Dave Ramsey. Make our kids, like Ellie said, make your kids do it, is such an eye-opener. I mean, what a reality check, because you'll be like, oh, no, I'm just going to do this.
Yeah.
And then the next day, well, I'll just do this.
Yeah.
And the next day, well, I'm going to do this and this, but I'm all right.
Standing in line at the grocery store, they put the candy bars right in front of you, right?
Right there.
The Dr. Pepper when I'm checking out at Home Depot.
For 2 months.
Yeah. This is just an example again. If you want to save $4,800 in a year, which is going to be easier to drop it all at once or to do it in small increments, maybe taking it straight out of your paycheck, and you can probably miss that $200 twice a month, but it would probably be hard to part with $4,800 all at once. This kind of relates to page 45 in our workbook. So take a look at 45, big spreadsheet. I'll try to give you the long and the short of it. It's probably pretty obvious. So you got three people, early Eddie, late Lorna, wise Willie. Early Eddie puts away some money early in the game. For 7 years, he saves $3,000, and then he never saves anything after that. That $3,000, starting at age 23, just sitting there, average of 10%, $1 million. Leilorna waits until she's 30, and for a bunch of years saves $3,000, way more years than Eddie did. Almost the same amount, actually a little bit less. So that really demonstrates early in the game. And then Wise Willie saved the $3,000 throughout his whole life. So the first 7 years and all the subsequent years, and he's got twice as much as they do. So just kind of eye-opening with the numbers. That's the difference it makes getting after it when you're young. Any thoughts on those three characters?
Question of where do you get 10% interest on anything?
Yeah.
They're not factoring in the low interest rates that happen periodically.
Sure. It's an average return.
Okay. That's average return.
Yeah, I was thinking. There's a somewhere in that.
Yeah, there's a date. There's a statistic somewhere.
There's a serious roller coaster. They lost it all. I mean, that's life. That's why you do it for a long time.
Yeah.
So there, on page 47, they threw in the statistics. Since 1926, so I think that's a little before the big crash.
33.
The stock market has provided investors with an approximate 10% annualized return. So, averaging the highs and the lows. Yeah, well, that's another thing, too, that you have to think about is especially as you get closer to retirement when you need that money to be there, you might start taking some of it out of the more high-risk stuff and put it into more stable things like bonds so that you know it's not going to take a dip right before you need it. Yep.
So kind of what a couple of people were saying, and we all probably know people like this, but my friend has three girls in the family, and when she grew up, her parents were very well-off at a young age, but she's the youngest, and the oldest was very much older. So they retired really early, had a ton of money, and then each one of the kids were given $3 million to set aside for them. The first one, the oldest one, got the $3 million and bought a house, right? And dad, later in life, made a really bad investment and lost everything, went completely bankrupt. But that $3 million for that house is gone now, right?
Yeah.
So the second daughter, before they lost everything, invested that in her higher education, so she got her doctorate and whatever, and so at least she was able to earn, you know, but she's still used to having a lot of money and doesn't kind of understand the value of money. By the time the youngest came through, her parents were bankrupt. That $3 million that had been sitting in there is gone, and so she struggles a little tiny bit with this, like, thought that even though I knew that I was going to save on my own, goodness, that is not there as I go, you know, but I look at all the three of them and which one do I feel is the best, you know,
grounded.
She's the youngest is, because she thought she was going to have that, but she didn't end up getting it, but yet she's still totally fine. The other two were super dependent on this money that's no longer there, and then dad cannot recover as an alcoholic now because function with the fact that he built this, you know, empire and then lost everything, and now his pride is completely lost, you know. So you just kind of see this roller coaster ride that all of this can, if it's too much, like what Rosemary was saying, is if it's too much focus on your plan and what is, you know, where's the root of it, like we're all talking about here, you know, is if you lost everything, would you still be able to just be that and keep going, you know, because life throws challenges that, you know, throw you completely off track, but can you keep building? And I see a lot of good examples of people that have lost everything and keep going, and they're fine. So.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit last time about, all right, if our identity is wrapped up in our wealth, which is what you're saying, I think Pastor said it in his sermon this morning one way or another, our worth is in what God gave for us, what he paid for us ultimately, the perfect life of his son. Good example. That would make a great slide as well, comparing those three. Okay, so getting into some specifics about saving in a tax-advantaged way. Again, not an investment advisor, so we'll just give some very simple information to you, and some of you are probably more expert on some of these things than I am. But there are ways that you can save along the lines of 401ks, 403bs. Those are more or less the same idea. 401k being for-profit organizations, 403b nonprofit organizations. And the idea there is the money gets taken out of your paycheck before it's taxed. So you're avoiding being taxed now. You will be taxed later on when you withdraw.
And sometimes the employer will match for it.
Right. And what I've heard on that is if your employer matches 401k or 403b contributions, job one would be to maximize giving through that way or saving through that way as much as your employer will match. Take advantage of as much of that as you can. And then you got the IRAs, Roth IRAs. So the Roth IRA is taxed now, not taxed later. But I think the traditional IRA is more like 401k. It's going to be avoid taxes now. It's going to get taxed later.
There are some Roth.
Nice. The double advantage.
$25.
And then the SEP, I don't know a lot about this, but it stands for Simplified Employee Pension, and it was talking about someone who's self-employed. Do you know anything more about this than I do?
That's basically what it is. It's a self-employed person who can set aside so much a year and work similar to
a
self-employed.
Okay. And then there are also some of these tax advantage accounts, there's limits to what you can be putting in them too. Non-qualified accounts, so in other words, not the things that we're talking about there, you're going to be fully taxed as income. And you still might be able to make a lot of money from them, but they're going to be taxed.
You're only taxed on your gain, not taxed on what you pay. So if you put $50,000 in, you already paid your taxes on that.
Right.
You're taxed on whatever it gained while it's in.
Okay. Yep.
I'm sure pretty much everybody knows this except for maybe the college students might be heavily penalized if you pull out from
a retirement account. Yeah.
So not a good idea to put money in there unless you know it can stay.
Yeah. A few years ago, there was a family that pulled some funds to pay tuition that way, and I would, on the one hand, I had tremendous respect for the fact that they wanted this so badly, but on the other hand, it was like, that's not helping, or that's hurting. Okay? So again, another testament to the sooner the better. A 25-year-old investing in an IRA, actually contributing a little bit less than $200,000, and that becoming almost $1.8 million, waiting until you're 40, contributing about $100,000 and only seeing that grow to about $250,000. So, sooner is better.
So, everyone in this room, besides the two college students, hopefully.
Including the two college students?
Other, if we hadn't already been doing that, then we're feeling sad about it.
Oh, right. Yeah, that, you guys have hope. The rest of us. Some saving tools, it's basically comparing the idea of risk versus reward. So your standard savings account, your reward is next to nothing because your interest rate is less than one. But your money's stable and stays there, although it's probably falling behind the rate of inflation. Anyway, from there you can go up to money market, bonds, mutual funds, playing the stock market. And the risk becomes greater, but then there's also the potential for more yield. And then vice versa, go in the other direction. Some of those early ones are safer, but the opportunity for a higher yield is much less. That kind of gives you an example of some different ways of savings and what the annual return is going back to 1926 through the year 2002. So you can see, you know, saving in bonds around 6%. Large company stocks versus small company stocks. There's greater risk in small company stocks because they're just getting off the ground and they may or may not make it. But if they make it, there's potential for great gain. Large company stocks are more stable because they're established, and if they do well, there's opportunity for gain, but not quite as much because they're already established.
Think of Microsoft. Wouldn't we all have liked to have been in on that? But then you don't know.
Yeah, there's a country song about that.
Ha ha ha.
talking about, can you know what I'm talking about?
Like, ain't that crazy?
Yeah, ain't that crazy, right. Putting some money into some guy that started some little computer thing in his garage and then becomes
they
Microsoft.
Crazy or something. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Nice job. Nice job. Growth of savings, 40 years, compare 5% with 10%. So you see the exponential aspect of it. For 20 years, you're probably talking like three times as much with the 10% growth. 30 years, 40 years, wow.
Well, I think this plus that last slide, risk and return are two sides of the same coin. I don't want to take any risks.
This might be
if you're white, not black, on this chart. I mean,
this is if you were less risky and you went the bond route, you're here. And if you were, so again, you meet with a planner and they've got, you know, a lot of times they have just different pie charts that show you this is what your objective should be. And if you're early in the game, 20s and 30s, 40s or whatever, and it's very long-term oriented and you're going to ride some highs and some lows, and you're more stock market oriented, mutual funds, what have you, you know, more potential for that.
It's mixing time and risk here. So you're getting a double effect, but yeah, I mean, there needs to be risk. That's, I think, the point they're trying to make.
Yep.
Maybe just for the college students, but one of the things when we went to our financial planner, which happened to be my cousin, so it kind of felt comfortable, but he kind of just gave us that grid. It was pre-tax, after-tax, high risk, low risk, and then, you know, where are you in each one of these boxes so that you're diversified and so that you don't have all your eggs in one basket kind of thing. So that was a really enlightening meeting we had when we first got married, because we had really, you think you know those things, and then when you put it all like that, what kind of things are in each box, and making sure you kind of have each, you know, on hand in all of it, it certainly makes you feel better about having your stuff put together. So it's, even though I feel like I'm a very disciplined saver and stuff, I wouldn't have done a lot of those things if someone didn't point it out.
Right out of the gate, right?
Yep.
Good. So now we get to our spending plan, where if we're working through those worksheets, we can start to specifically talk about how we might start allocating some funds for saving in those three different areas, short-term, middle-term, long-term. So this is kind of just taking a look at that. Let's just let this play out here. You got some animation. You got this on your worksheet, page 49. The old self looks at its income and spends it, and maybe retires debt with it. The new self, here's your P for priority, gives, cares for basics, and then saves. So hopefully, it's possible that the new self still in that care basics category might be retiring some debt, but hopefully we can get that debt retired to the point that we're not paying off debt, we're able to meet our needs and then save beyond. We got about 3 minutes left. I don't know how much discussion there'll be, but at your tables, just take a look back over what we did today and what we did last time. Any new insights that you learned? Any helpful experiences that you might share? Any successes that you can report? Struggles that you're having? How can we help, but we're not financial planners? So go ahead and talk a little bit. Okay, I know you, I just sent you down a path of discussion. I am going to cut you off because we got to wrap this up, and there is a nice summary that I want to share with you. So our first session in this moving through the acronym FOCUS, F4, Fix Your Eyes on Lasting Treasure, top of page 51 in your workbook, the O in FOCUS for Overcome Worry by Knowing the Father's Care. So again, as much as we're talking specifics about saving and giving and planning, at the end of the day, knowing that we're in the Father's care. My relationship, God's my Father. My identity, I'm His child. My heart is filled with trust and contentment. And my focus is, it does not rest on my abilities because it is God who's providing for me. And then I'll read the summary for you. As individuals move further into developing their financial plans, they often develop a greater fear and anxiety. How will I ever get out of debt? Did I get the right amount of insurance? Do I have enough invested for retirement? Worry and anxiety can choke out a joyful and fruitful life. Our financial security is beyond what we can see. It goes far beyond my choices and abilities. It depends on a God who is greater than all the challenges and needs of life. Throughout written history, He showed His power over impossible odds. He proved His ultimate love and care for us by sending His Son to live, die, rise, and rule over this world for us. Yet He often quietly works behind the scenes to provide daily bread by the opportunities and abilities He's given us to work. He, in turn, also takes care of others through the income and resources He provides through us. He further protects us and our livelihood through governments to which we owe taxes. He provides tremendous opportunities for us to wisely save or invest in order to prepare greater benefits for the future. Life is out of balance when we think it all rests on us. It helps to keep our hearts in focus. We have a caring and powerful Father in heaven working out the details for our lives. Giving regular offerings to Him demonstrates the honor He deserves and the thanks we want to express. Generosity shows trust in His many promises to bountifully replenish our supply when we put Him first. He, in turn, is able to take our meager resources and make them multiply to benefit the lives of others. Get to know your Heavenly Father by reading about His actions and promises recorded in the Bible, then talk to Him daily in prayer. Thank Him for the blessings you've identified and entrust Him with the care of your life. Let's close session two with prayer. Lord, sometimes we become fearful of the future and worry how things will turn out. Forgive us for thinking that we are God and in control of our world. Open our eyes to see how blessed we are. Help us trust your love for us and your power as we make bold steps into our day. Help us to be content with what you have given us at this stage in our lives. Then give us energy and insight to pursue the direction you give for our lives. Amen. Sorry, I had a hard time putting all those pronouns in the plural form. Okay, session two is behind us. Again, if you want to practically be working with the spending plan, by all means, please do. And we'll dig in session three next time.